It's the Playhouse Podcast with Kat and JJ on demand, even if you're on the can.
Dude, come on.
So our listener Jackie is a nerd. Her boyfriend is a nerd, but she just found out something very specific about him, and she's thinking about breaking it off. Should she? Find out a little bit later on in the podcast. Let's go.
All right, so not so much an email, a DM to my Facebook last night, and I was reading it when I was sitting on the couch, and I was like, oh, this is like kind of a I'm getting a lump in my throat, Samantha, but it was a flashback. She said, hey, Kat, I know that you had postpartum. I have it right now, but I feel like things are getting a little bit better every day, so that's great. My husband has called it a mental illness a few times now since we figured out what was going on, and it really bugs me. He said it to me. He says it to his mom. He says it to his brother. I know that I'm almost over this hump, but to know that that's what he equates it to, it sounds like he thinks I'm crazy. It doesn't help the healing process at all. Any route that I can go to educate him? ? That would be a visit with you to your doctor. I don't blame men when they think a certain way, because you don't go through what a female's body goes through. And that's okay. It's like you're a guy. We're a female. Certain things happen to our body. How could you possibly understand it unless you're educated about it?
Just seems insensitive, though, to call it a mental illness.
It sure does. A mental illness is stigmatized, like you should be on a 5150. Get her somewhere because she is going to harm. And that is not the case. I would say 9 times out of 10, when you have postpartum, it's all about you. It's all about you getting out of the equation. You don't want to harm your baby. You just want to leave because you feel like you are not good enough. You are so depressed. You are in the darkest spot. All you want to do is love on your baby and be there and be this new mom. But it's a crazy thing, man, when your brain turns on you.
Well, let's turn this into a positive thing. I know every case is different, but if you could offer up a tip that you think helped you get through it and get to the other side, what would yours be?
Yeah, I would say visit your physician. Because that was when she goes, welcome to the club. You know, she was like, you have no idea how many women I see every day. Let's get you on something. Let's make you a little bit happier. Or let's find an avenue that works best for you. A lot of people don't want to get on a drug like Zoloft.
Were you hesitant to get on?
Not a second, not a millisecond. I was like, oh my God, I can't keep feeling like this. Like, how did I even find my way to the doctors today? Your brain is in such a fog. And then she's just like, well, it's going to be about a couple of weeks until it kicks in. I'm like, I am going to be honest with you. I don't know if I have a couple of weeks, you know, like that's how dark you get. Some people do. And then if you have two other kids or another kid on top of that,
more responsibilities.
I can't even imagine.
Were you ever afraid that you, I mean, I know there's always a plan when a physician gives you any kind of a drug or a you know, medicine or whatever. But were you afraid that it was going to be tough to get off it then?
No, but it was a little bit tough. So I was on it for like 6 months and then I tried to wean myself off. And then I was like, oh, it's kind of hard to smile today. And then you're on it for like 3 more months and then I was done. So it was throughout Liam's first year of being on this planet.
But do you think your body was kind of telling you it's time to get off this, or I don't necessarily need it anymore?
Yeah, I was hoping I didn't need it anymore. I didn't want to be on it. I didn't want the responsibility of taking something every day. But sometimes you have to function. So
we have a little time to dedicate to this. If you had gone through it, or maybe are going through it, you know, what was, if you could give a piece of advice? I mean, Kat's saying, go to your doctor, get your happy pills. I mean, you know, it's important for you and your family and especially your little one.
Worked for me.
Right.
But if you're a male out there and you went through it with your female, with the mother of your child, how did you educate yourself? How did you figure out that maybe you needed to use softer wording or just kind of sit this one out and just be a support system? You know, it's like, it's a really good question, Samantha. I wonder what needs to happen for him to stop calling it that. Maybe just a very serious conversation with you. Like, this is not good. You cannot call it a mental illness. Essentially, it is, but it's not.
Got a DM from Samantha. Kat did yesterday.
So I was reading it and it hit close to home. She says, hey, Kat, I know that you had postpartum. So that was like 11 years ago. But she said, I have it right now. I feel like things are getting a little bit better every day. My husband has called it a mental illness a few times since we figured out what was going on. And it really bothers me. He said it to me, said it to his mom. He's said it to his brother. I know that I'm almost over this hump, but to know that that's what he equates it to, it makes it sound like he thinks I'm crazy. It doesn't help the healing process at all. How should I go about educating him a little bit more about what I'm going through? And I just suggest having him go with you, because I think if a doctor talks to you and him together, like, this is what she's going through, it's totally normal.
Especially if your doctor has a good bedside manner. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you know that they get through with really, really good words, then it's probably going to help both you guys.
Every woman has postpartum. It just doesn't get to the postpartum depression level, you know? So it could just be a chemical imbalance. It is. And then it just messes you up.
Hannah, any tips or tricks here?
So my biggest thing that I was actually told by one of the NICU nurses was that you know your baby best, and you've been able to provide for that baby for as long as possible. My husband also did a lot of research on his own and found other dads who had, you know, wives or partners who were going through that time. Yeah. And he really just worked with them and talked with them about his issues that he was dealing with my postpartum anxiety and depression.
How long did you kind of, suffer with, you said you had anxiety and depression. How long was it?
So I actually have had anxiety and depression since they think about the age of 4 is the earliest that they could tell.
Wow.
It just heightened. I was probably about 6 months pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so I had antepartum anxiety and depression, and then also postpartum.
Okay.
And the postpartum, that lasted until she was about a year. There's still some anxiety, but there's always going to be some mom anxiety.
Yeah, as you're a parent, there always is. Yeah.
The parenting. Yep.
Last question, because I'm sure you got to get going and we got to kind of wrap things up here too. But when this all kind of went down, were you like, Kat said she was not hesitant whatsoever to take any medication on this. Were you kind of like that? Were you just like, all right, sure, give me whatever you think is best? Or were you kind of like, for me, when I go to the doctor and they're like, well, I'm going to need you to take this immediately. Like, I do so much research because I'm like, I'm sure you're trying to do the best thing for me, but is it absolutely the best? Did you second guess that at all?
I didn't, because for me, it was just an increase in my dosing.
Uh-huh.
Cause I've been on antidepressant medication that also helps with my anxiety since I was probably 16.
Okay.
Is when we found one that worked. And so that's just the one that I've always been on. So it was just, changing that dosing up a little bit as my hormones changed and my body changed.
Yeah.
And now, it's backing down and just refiguring that out, because it's still, once you have a child, like, your body changes forever, I guess you could say. And it's okay to need to change things up as well. Like, that shouldn't be an issue, because you had, you grew this life.
Right.
And so to be the same, and that's okay.
Well, you are wise and probably helped out a lot of people right now walking around pregnant, wondering what is to come. But there is no way of planning at all. So
this is hard for me to even be a part of this conversation, because I didn't miss a day of school until I got mono when I was a sophomore in high school.
So you were just never sick, or did you have to just go sick?
Never sick. I was never sick.
Wow.
Yeah. That's I didn't impressive. Miss a single day and I remember I got mono, and that was the only day I missed, other than when you're a senior and you skip and you're kind of doing some stuff like that. But understanding that you guys had a routine when you had sick days, you would watch certain programs or eat certain foods. For me, this is all just odd. I only remember days we had off school, and I would watch soap operas with my mom or my grandma.
Yeah.
I remember watching Days of Our Lives. I hated Stefano so bad. And I always thought Hope was it. I'm going to marry that girl.
Yeah.
And other than that, this is all just a little bit odd to me.
I took mental health days before they were a thing. And I think kids should be allowed to take some mental health days too.
But they should have some PTO.
They should, on weeks that they don't have statewide testing. Let them stay home on a random Wednesday.
Probably onto something there.
Who cares? They're going to love you for it. But my mom didn't have time to check temperatures and stuff. She had to get to school herself. She was a teacher. My dad had to commute to the city from where we lived, and he had to bring my two siblings with to get them to school on time. Nobody ever sat there and said, I wonder if she's faking it. So I would go downstairs. I'd get comfy on the couch. I'd bring down my snacks.
Give me some snacks.
We didn't have good snacks. I'd bring down like my granola bar or maybe like some popcorn or whatever.
Okay.
And I'd sit there and watch Jenny Jones. I'd watch Jerry Springer. They were always on that early in the morning. Then I'd take a little nap. Then I'd come back. Sally was on. I'd watch some daytime Saved by the Bell. I mean, I had my lineup. And so I'd do that like maybe once every other month. I'm like, I need to take a day. But I was talking to my friend Megan, who she's like, my girls are the best fakers. And sometimes I just don't know if they really are sick. So she'll say stuff like, the neighbor's going to swing by a couple times today and check on you guys. Oh. So you just don't know when they're coming over. So you got to be on your best behavior all day. Then she'll say things like, I'm going to try to get out of work early. I just don't know if I can, but if I do, I'll be home. Then they'll be like, what time? It's like, I don't know what time, you know, leave them guessing. But I don't know. A lot of parents just don't believe their kids are sick.
Has Liam pulled this stuff on you guys yet?
No, he like never, ever is sick either, which is what I'm thankful for. So
I look back now, my 16-year-old in high school, he's a sophomore. I'm sure he's pulled the wool over my wife's eyes a few times.
Yeah.
But it's not even in my wheelhouse because I'm here.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's sick or not. Like there's times I got home from work, like I'll go to the gym after work and I'll get home. And he'll be just sitting there watching a baseball game or something like that. Uh-huh. I'd be like, you feeling better? Yeah, I sure am.
Lisa's mom never believed she would say she could have mono. She could have like a terrible flu and she would have a chore list. And I'm like, that is not fair.
Paula, what was the regimen here?
Oh, well, my mom, she had a very interesting approach. And I think she learned it from my grandma. Okay. My grandma used to always say, like, if a kid comes to you and they're bored, just make sure that they have a chore and they will never tell you they're bored again. Oh,
wow.
Very, so, very clever.
Yeah, grandma, I loved her. She was hard, but she was good. But yeah. So my mom followed suit. And when we would want to stay home from school, she would be like, okay, yeah, I'm sure your stomach hurts, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
She would put us to work. She'd leave a list on the fridge. nice. And by God, if we weren't doing her pedicure and making dinner, that's an exaggeration. But it felt that way sometimes. And
no
I think
way.
As an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as an adult, you know, and even.
Was she always thinking you were like a Ferris Bueller, that you were faking it and that you weren't legitimately sick?
Well, I think most working class parents in this country feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, especially people that are immigrants. It's like, I have three jobs and my leg got chopped off yesterday. I got to be at work at 5. You know, people don't think that way.
Yeah.
Right. So
no
I think
sympathy.
It's a little hard to. Yeah. Right. Right. And, you know, kids are hard to communicate with anyway. They eat clay and pick their boogers. You know, how are you going to know that they're actually able to communicate with you?
Good call. Hey guys, it's Kat and JJ. We're discussing the things that you really looked forward to when you got to stay home from school. Kat was a big Jenny Jones fan, like Jerry Springer, would watch Saved by the Bell. I want to bring Lucinda onto the show because she's got a rather unique situation brewing, or it had a unique situation when she was trying to stay home from school sick.
Oh yeah, my mom left for work before we got up for school. And if we called her at work and told her that we were sick, we had to bring the barf bucket over to the neighbor.
Shut up.
To prove that we barfed, because we did not go to school unless we barfed or had a temperature of 102.
And how many times did you have to bring the barf bucket to the neighbor?
3.
Jesus.
Oh my God.
And I couldn't fake barfing. And so, like, I would have to, if I said, oh, I barfed, and there was, like, some slime or whatnot, when I barf, the top eyelids, I look like I have blue eyeshadow on because I barf so intense.
You were so violent with your throw-up?
Yeah, that my eyelids would, like, literally, like, pop little blood vessels. And so I would show a bucket, and the neighbor would look at my eyes, and she's like, no, that's not yours.
What a horrible neighbor.
How about $3,000 cash? We can make it happen for you, and it only takes just a couple of seconds of your day. We'll give you an opportunity about 8:40 Wednesday morning during the live show. Right now, let's wrap up the podcast.
Get out with LPP. Can you help me?
Get out with LPP.
Can you help me?
Get out with LPP.
Can you help me?
Get out with LPP.
Everybody!
OPP, it's other people's problems, and maybe you have a solution for our listener Jackie here this morning. I want to get into exactly how she's feeling duped, but it starts with you being a nerd, right?
Yes, I am a nerd. Okay. I got started playing Call of Duty when I was much younger, and I found a way to like communicate with all these people through either the Xbox app or, you know, just basically, you form clans and alliances and stuff, and you meet other nerds. So,
So you met your match.
Basically.
And your text said your boyfriend, Richard, you guys met on a dating app, but now you're feeling a little different towards Richard. Why?
Right. So when I saw Richard on Tinder, I was, or I'm not supposed to say that maybe.
That's okay.
But when I saw him, I was really excited to see that he was also a gamer. He had this whole like cute little selfie vibe going on and, you know, with his headset on and stuff. And I was like, hell yeah. Seemed to have a pretty good job on the side. You know, he's not just like living in mom's basement. And,
okay.
So... Anyway, we start to just like send these messages back and forth, and he's wonderful. Like, I'm kind of swept away. He's sending me these, like, of course, very nerdy topics.
Yeah.
But beautifully written letters where I feel like such a princess, right?
Okay, that's good.
And then I find out, well, hang on. I find out that he's been writing all of this through AI programs.
Like, what a schmuck.
Those weren't even his words.
I don't like that.
No, and also the whole, like, I'm a stable person and look at my cute selfie. No.
So now you're in a relationship with somebody that...
He's a plagiarist.
He's a poser. He's the worst kind of pee.
He's a poser.
Like, you thought you were getting something. You got catfish, girl. You got nerdy catfish.
Well, I feel like I do. And, I mean, one of the main reasons is, like, when I finally got invited to go over to his place, he's the kind of nerd that will, like, scoot laundry and trash into the corner and make it into a beanbag you can sit on while you watch him play
Xbox
my
God.
In his underwear.
You are saying all this out loud. Like, we need a little
sure
bit more wind to blow those red flags for you, huh?
Honestly, I'm kind of laughing at it at this point. I'm looking at what's going on, and I just feel like people are so disingenuous now that I'm honestly kind of not even mad. I just wanted to spewl.
So this would be, and I appreciate your call, this would be a great time to turn things over to listeners. What if you would have found out that all of those love letters you were getting from your man as you were dating were written by AI?
So at first I was thinking, what a loser for doing it. And then as we wrapped up that call, I was thinking, if he is matching the words with his actions since then, and you've been happy, then maybe you just let it go and look at it like he just really wanted to impress you and didn't know how but to use ChatGPT to help him there. I don't know.
Is this different than renting a really high-end car for your first date and telling him it's yours?
And then picking her up in a, you know, busted Honda later on down the road. I don't know. That's more of like a showboater.
I would think it would be kind of flattering that he went to the extent of saying, maybe my words aren't the greatest. I'm going to use
I want to make you feel good. Yeah.
How do you guys feel about this?
Look at this. This is what came out of, remember Sarah from 60 Days In?
No.
And she was...
Oh, is she
listener.
The Minnesota girl?
Yeah. So she went on that show 60 Days In. She's doing a parasite cleanse, and I might do it. So this is where it sheds. That came out of her butt.
Ooh.
And it's on a cookie sheet, and you know she's going to bake something on that.
As you're listening, you know what it reminds me of is if you've ever had to go down your sink and pull out like hair and stuff like that, or like if your tub is clogged and you do a pull up as far as the drain goes and you got that long icky gross grayish blackish kind of stuff of hair, that's what that reminds me of. But this is like 3 feet long.
She's doing the IG Sanctuary Holistic Wellness Parasite Cleanse, and it's supposed to rid you of all of the metals and toxins in your body, clear out any stones. I'm wondering how it would fare because I don't have a colon, but she did like this, and then you're supposed to do an enema.
Ooh.
How's your father? And then it all comes out, and then you like, she sifted through the toilet and pulled out all these long sections.
I don't know if I'd do that.
I mean, I'm totally open to it. I just don't know if I should be doing it.
Is the other thing is, well, I guess you don't have a colon, so it's not about your colon health, but I mean, are there some parasites that you want in there? I mean, yeah. As far as the biotics go, is that going to be a healthy thing in the long run?
Yeah, these are all good questions, but just to see it on her story yesterday, she was like, she has the strongest Minnesotan accent, so she's like, okay, guys, what I'm going to show you, you might want to fast forward, because it's a bit gross, but there's stones and unhealthy worms, and I'm just like, good Lord.
What's your most stressful time of the day? Is it doing a syndicated radio show and having to do most of the work around here? Is that your most stressful time of the day? Well, you do most of the work for the show. I think everybody knows that. I would think if I had to look from the outside in, I would think your most stressful time would be between 5 and 6, just trying to get things lined up for the show.
Never. You know when it is? It is dinner time. I do not enjoy it. I don't enjoy having to come up with something for two other people. Like, I love to eat healthy. I could have just like quinoa, or you know what I wanted to make yesterday? I wanted to make like a Greek platter where I could have diced up tomato and cucumber, but this one doesn't like cucumber and this one loves tomato, and
you have
no
to
one
cater
likes
to everybody else.
Kalamata olives. And I'm just like, I hate that. I hate it. And trying to be creative, and I really only have like a handful of things that I can put a smile on their face with. And then other stuff I get this like, it was fine. It was fine. I get that. And I don't like that. So it is one of my most stressful times of the day.
My most stressful time, honestly, is between 8 p.m. and whenever I actually fall asleep. Because I know if I don't get enough sleep the next day, I'm going to suffer. My workout's going to suffer. The show's probably not going to be as good as it should be. And my son had said to me last night that if I don't get at least like one nap throughout the week, like just 15 minutes.
Yeah.
He and Trish, they start putting a plan together of how they're going to handle me on Thursday and Friday.
Oh, because you're
depending
a bear?
On whether, right, because apparently I get a little bitchy.
Oh.
But they had said now, the research came out, and the most stressful time of the day for most people is 8:15 a.m. if they had to put a minute on it.
Yeah.
So they said, here's the deal. It's the combination of getting ready, you getting ready in the morning, helping others get ready, prepping breakfast, commuting, helping others get to work or school, and then some of the other challenges. Most of us spend over 20 minutes a day, and in the morning is when we seem to try and tackle these other challenges that just pop up. Your kid is sick, you got a flat tire, whatever the deal is. But 8:15 in the morning is the most stressful time of the day for most people.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like all of that could culminate into suddenly feeling chaotic, which is never fun.
We've been doing this show so long that we don't have to worry about the commute. We don't have to worry about breakfast or anything like that, or getting others ready. So like, you take those three big things out of it.
Yes.
We don't feel those stresses, even though we got to come on and do a radio show. But if you're just kind of getting up and getting going this morning, we've heard over the years from a lot of people that get up early because they are able to navigate these kind of things and get them all out of the way before the rest of their family wakes up.
Yep.
Or stuff like that. So if your most stressful part of the day is 8:15, then well, turn us on because it'll make you feel better about yourself. But find a way to get through it. They say prepping the night before, looking at your phone, looking at what you all have going on, what meetings you have, what you got to do. And most people at this time of the year are probably in the habit of getting their kids to school in time and breakfast and stuff like that.
Right.
But if you can prep it a little bit ahead of time, maybe oats overnight or something like that.
See, I can handle breakfast. That's the thing. If I had to serve them breakfast, I enjoy making those on Saturdays and Sundays when we're at home. Breakfast is simple as a pimple, but dinner got me shook. I don't like it.
My family's along the line of breakfast is not necessary. I think we still have enough caveman DNA in us that we're not used to eating until at least hunting time.